From theunts.com, this is the Unts Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunts.com.
Hello and welcome to the Unts Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. We've got a special episode this week. America's first king of dubstep, 12th Planet, is my guest. And this program will give you 3 credits in music theory. Let's jump right in because we get a lot of show.
Growing up in LA, what kind of music were you exposed to?
I think the first stuff that I learned to really love was hip-hop and dance. I guess it would kind of be like electro breakdance music. I had an older brother that he was already in high school when I was like 3-4 years old. And I would just go through all of his mixtapes. And like my cousin lived at my grandma's house and he was like 13-14 years old when I was 4. So like he had like NWA and like Eazy-E and all that kind of stuff. So I think that was like the first real love that I got into. And then once I got cable TV, I started getting into MTV and like those kind of things, like Motley Crue and Guns N' Roses and those kind of videos. Yeah. So I kind of had like a broad upbringing on music, but I guess those two I can really identify with, early hip hop and heavy metal from like that era.
were you also playing instruments as a youngster?
Yeah. I started out with, you get those Casio keyboards when you're young.
Yeah.
The one that's got like the built-in bossa nova and the and it's got the little like woodblock sounds. So I started with one of those, and then I got the bass guitar when I was like 13, and then I got the guitar when I was 14, and then that led to drums and all that kind of stuff and playing in jam bands. And so yeah, I started out, you know, with hip-hop and heavy metal, but it progressed into having to learn how to play the actual music and instruments. And then from there I got into working on music with computers and samplers and stuff like that.
Do you remember your first experience with DJs or electronic music, or had it always sort of been mixed in with everything else you were listening to?
I remember first hearing electronic music when I was like in 5th grade. There's a radio station based out in Los Angeles called Power 106, and the majority of the music in the playlist was like hip-hop at nighttime and house and deep house during the day. So like everybody at my school, my elementary school, you know, we were like exposed to house like at an early age.
That's interesting.
Deep house, yeah. When I got to high school, my buddies were like, yo, you guys, you know, over in Inglewood listen to that deep house, but like over in East LA, we listen to like this hard house. And so my buddy got me really into Dutch hard house, which eventually led into hardcore and gabber. And then from there I got into...
You listen to gabber?
Yeah, I listen to gabber, man. Like house, like, but it was like faster and more heavy metal and it had way more energy. And I hadn't like taken a roll yet. I hadn't taken any pills yet, but it sounded like hard house, like on speed.
Exactly.
So I got really into that. And from there that led to jungle and drum and bass. And that became my life. That became my passion for years. Then I got into dubstep, which is kind of the logical progression from there.
Makes sense. Before we get into how you got into dubstep, I wonder what made you say, you know, I've been listening to this electronic music. I figured it out. Now it's time to start making it.
Oh, wow. Probably when I was like 15 or 16 years old, I think I went to like a rave with some of my friends. And I just saw that this one DJ, I can't remember who it was. It might have been like Rondicore or Demigod or something like that. I just saw how much energy the guy was putting into a set and like how the kids were just responding to the music and like everybody was part of this big family that, you know, it could have been synthetic because everyone's rolling off their face and like there's not like a mean person in there. I fell in love with that, the movement and like the camaraderie and the community and being like, I went to this like all boy Catholic high school, but every weekend I'd go to the rave and I'd be hanging out with kids from Culver City and kids from Manhattan Beach, kids from West Hollywood, kids from Pacific Palisades, kids from Pasadena, kids from San Bernardino, kids from Orange County, Irvine, Huntington Beach, like all over the place. Our one thing that we had in common was this music that nobody else even liked. Our one thing in common was fact, we wore these big ass pants. It trips me out how big those pants used to be.
They were enormous. You could fit an entire slice of pizza in the pockets of those pants.
You could fit pizza, a gun, a fucking Russian mail order bride, and like 3 packages of sweatshirts. They're so big.
So you came at dubstep from this drum and bass sort of angle, the jungle angle.
Yeah.
What was it about the step that grabbed you? Was it the intensity, but at the same time, you could have that halftime feel that just lets you sit back in the cut and then pounce like a leopard?
I think what drew me to dubstep from drum and bass was the fact that it was still like an English subculture. And on top of that being an English subculture, it started to incorporate a lot of the same noises and sounds that were being used in drum and bass. And not only was it the same kind of sounds, it was the sounds from the period of drum and bass that was like my favorite, which happened to be like late 1998 to 2004, 2005 sound, which was influenced by like Virus and Decipher. And
sort of that grime garage era?
No, like Decipher was like a record label that was started by Trace, and Virus was a record label that was started by Ed Rush and Optical, and Renegade Hardware and Under Fire were like these record labels that weren't so drum and bass even. Like drum and bass was like a term, I guess, that was coined by Goldie, and it kind of was used to describe like the metalhead sound. Anything after that is kind of described as being tech step or dark step or new step. And that was kind of my favorite period because it was not so like commercially viable. Like there wasn't like Aphrodite remixes of I Got Five on it in the vein of this sound. It was instrumental music that had this appealing of darkness. And when I say darkness, like I'm totally mean like satanic and shit like that.
Yeah,
like, it had those kind of undertones without being like Ozzy Osbourne eating bats on stage and like having to wear like pentagrams on your sleeve. It was kind of this undertow. That was like the vibe that I got with dubstep, was of that period of this no U-turn Renegade Hardware neurofunk type sound, but it was done tastefully and it was in a manner that was sort of similar to hip hop and grime.
But now it seems like dubstep is completely out in the open, that it's become mainstream across the board in a lot of cities, in a lot of clubs. What happens now? What happens for dubstep? What happens for DJs like you and this sort of underground aesthetic of it?
Yeah, to be fair, like, it's not the first time that I've seen this happen to a genre, because the same thing happened with hip hop and the same thing happened with drum and bass, where it became like a open format type music, which just basically meant that the only parameters was the BPM.
Sure.
Where like with drum and bass, around 2003, 2004, drum and bass didn't have to be jump up or a tech step. It could have incorporated samba, which was like people like DJ Marky and Patife and all these Brazilian guys started making like samba with their step. And, you know, Tech Itch and Dylan, you know, they started experimenting with heavy metal. The same exact things happened with dubstep. There was like a specific sound in 2005 and 2006. But as new producers and new people embrace the music, they incorporate the sounds that influence them as an artist into that music. And then they call it their own sound. People like Borgore, you know, Borgore loves like gangster rap, West Coast gangster rap and Cottonmouth Kings and trash rap like that. And he loves heavy metal. So he takes what he knows and he makes his own sound, which is like a heavy metal trash rap hybrid at a dubstep BPM. And the same is going to happen with, you know, all kinds of different artists, like people like Skrillex, you know, who come from a hardcore post-punk mentality. And the music that they grew up listening to shows in the dubstep that they create. It's going to continue like that for the rest of UK underground subculture genres. It's going to be like that for however long they keep creating new genres.
Slide over, let me drive. Watch me put it in recline. Slide over, let me drive. Watch me put it in recline. Slide over, let me drive. Watch me put it in recline. Slide over, let me drive. Watch me put it in recline.
The Southern Boy remix from 12th Planet and Flinch, right here on the UNS podcast.
Tell me then what the scene is like in LA. Is it about all that glitchy sound, that West Coast sound? What's going on in the clubs?
To describe like the Los Angeles culture it's really difficult because it's an open format. From what I remember when I first started like 5 years ago, 6 years ago, me and my partner Drew from Smog could name, you know, maybe 5 or 10 people that had even heard of the genre, let alone had enough tunes to play an entire set. I just find it funny because from those 10 people, we kind of like set the tone of what the sound was going to be, which basically was like a reincarnation of like the Marianne Hobbs Dubstep War show when she had DMZ and Scream and Banga and all that stuff. Like those are like the only artists that we were even familiar with, like on a dubstep level, Plastician, Mark One, all those kind of guys. And so when Scream and Banga and DMZ kind of like took off, and Scuba and Pinch as well, when those guys started making music, that was kind of like the shape and the sound that LA was really influenced by. For some strange reason, as the dubstep grew more popular, it tended to appeal to a more younger market, like a 16, 15, 14-year-old market.
Sure.
And when those kids became 18, 19, and they were like going to electro parties as well, they were just accustomed to like hype. Like everything was like, I don't know if you've ever been to like a Slipknot concert, but that's kind of like what it turned into. It went from like this like laid back smokers music to like
in your face, bombastic,
in your face, raw Slipknot mosh pit kind of stuff. And so when the energy kind of came into the scene, I think that shaped the sound to be more of a energetic sound and be more of a punk rock feel, be more of a metal feel, to be more of a in your face feel. So a lot of the sound that best describes Los Angeles is in your face. The bass lines are over exaggerated. It's more for shock value as opposed to musicality.
I get that. You'd mentioned this earlier. Tell me about your Smog label.
Smog is a record label that was started by me and my partner Drew, which was kind of a spin-off of this brand that my partner Drew started called Smog, which was basically, you know, one of the first dubstep crews in California. Granted, there was, you know, people had already been doing dubstep nights. My manager Danny threw the first dubstep show in California, and then, you know, San Francisco, they started Grime City, and my partner Drew just wanted to have an outlet for people in Los Angeles to just come and listen to this kind of music. So he started Smog, which was a night, and then eventually became resident DJs, and then became a crew, and then it became a record label, and then now it's just like a brand that we take on the road. It encompasses everything to do with dubstep.
I want to talk about your collaborations, because it seems like such a big part of your sound, and it seems like this is where you have the most fun. Tell me about Flinch, who seems to be your musical soulmate, if you will.
Yeah, Flinch is like my bestie, yo. I've known him for about 10, 11 years. We both started out in the drum and bass scene, and we also started a project called True Pseudo, which was like an electro house kind of project about 5-6 years ago. We always were making music, and we both were like the only producers that I could even think of that lived in Orange County. Granted, we weren't the only producers in Orange County, but he was the only other guy that I knew that I could have a serious conversation with.
Yeah.
In regards to production and type of music. And so that relationship just carried on, and we all have the same kind of friends and stuff like that. And so it's easy to vibe with them in the studio. And I mean, like, making tunes is fun, but making tunes by yourself all the time is kind of boring. It's kind of cool to like have a fallback person who gets it.
And then there's the new force on the scene coming out of seemingly nowhere, your buddy Sonny Moore, Skrillex. How'd you end up with him?
I met Sonny like at a Smog party about 3 or 4 years ago. He was, you know, still a touring artist. I really didn't even know that he was like in a band. I just thought he was like this kid, you know, who was just starting to make tunes, and he was just trying to get his name out there. And granted, his production level at that time wasn't like the greatest.
Yeah.
He still had drive, which is what I found very amazing. And about a year or two later, I saw him again, and like my homegirl was like, yo, you know, that's the lead singer from First to Last. I'm like, what? Yeah, right. Get the fuck out of here. Like the emo band. And sure enough, we crossed paths again, and he said he had quit the band and working on this new drum and bass, dubstep, electro, just all around electronic music project. And when he started playing me his stuff, I noticed that he had the most potential in each genre, because he sounded like the best producers of each genre. If you could say that he was influenced by Pendulum or Rob Swire and Noisia, and his production level was on par with those guys, for drum and bass, and then he was making dubstep that sounded like the best producers in dubstep, and then he was making electro that sounded like Justice or Bloody Beetroots or Deadmau5 or Wolfgang Gartner, who happened to be like the top of their food chain as well.
Sure, sure.
His sound reflected the quality of all three of the best producers of all three of the best genres. That really caught my eye, and his progression from when he first started to get good at producing the music to where he is now is phenomenal, because he's got like the greatest drive, the greatest work ethic I've seen in like any artist that is that young. You know, you don't really get that drive until like you've got a couple mortgages and a couple divorces under your belt. And from get-go, he was the one. The kid doesn't stop. He grinds so hard. I'm so proud of the success that's been bestowed upon him. I think it's funny when I go on his site and there's like so many fucking haters that are just like, he doesn't even produce his own music. Pendulum wrote that song for him. Or, oh man, like deadmau5 gave him all his samples and deadmau5 writes all of the stuff for him and all this bullshit. That's like so fucking bullshit. Like, it couldn't be more bullshit than that. His drive is so uncanny that the sky's the limit. I'm so motivated whenever he comes around because he makes you step your game up no matter what and everything.
He gets me nervous.
Skrillex and 12th Planet with Father Seth.
I'm curious about this. You had mentioned this earlier. DJing is such a solitary enterprise, and you like to work with other people. When you do go into the studio with someone else, what role do you like to play? Do you like to focus on beats or bass? I just wonder, you know, how you're like in a group setting in the studio.
In a group session, it's all vibes, man. So it's like whatever you vibe out on, that's like kind of where the song goes. Start with drums or bass or guitar or intro or outro or midtro. It starts with whatever sounds good and like how you feel at the moment. Some collaborations suck because you can't vibe with the person because the other dude's a stiff. You know, sometimes collaborations, like, they work from as soon as the person, like, hits the metronome on the program. So there's no real method to the mayhem. It's just all about how well the mutual parties get along in the cooperation.
You've been added to this year's Ultra Music Festival taking place in late March. Just a huge, huge bill.
Yep.
How do you feel like you and your genre are being represented at what is ostensibly the industry's biggest festival?
I think that dubstep's being represented quite well this year. I mean, to be fair, like, it's like about time that there's love on it for all 3 days and that there's its own room combined with drum and bass, you know? For years, like, that room was an only drum and bass room. It was a circle room. It was a Viram. It was an Andy C versus Virus, or Ram Records versus Virus room. And now they've like included, you know, the top tier dubstep producers like Rusko, Caspa, Scream, Benga, Skrillex, Magnetic Man, all of those kind of guys. I think it's good for the genre, but at the same time too, like, I think it would have had more impact if they were on it like 4 years ago, 5 years ago. But it doesn't hurt to have dubstep anywhere, right? So I'm not like hating on the fact that they booked dubstep.
Well, the industry is never one to be on top of things, are they?
Yeah, like, you know what I mean? Like Burning Man, like that shit's 95% dubstep. And that's like the premier event for all electronic music and like visuals and stuff like that and production. Burning Man's been on top of dubstep for like the last 7 years.
They know it. They know it.
Yeah.
It looks like you're on the road nonstop for a while. Is there any time squeezed in there for a record release? Have you even had time in the studio? It seems like you're flying this way and that.
Yeah, I have minimal time in the studio, and I'm not set up to make music on my laptop, although I should be and need to be. I'm not. So the only time that I get to even work on music is in between the road. So I'm on the road like 3-4 days a week, and then I'm in the studio the other. So that's pretty much the extent of my time. That's why a lot of collaborations get done on the road, because that's the only time I actually get to work on music.
Well, we hope to hear something from you soon. John Dodsey, 12th Planet, thank you so much for being on the Unz podcast.
Yo, respect a man, dude. 12th Planet loves theunz.com.
I use my youth luck to get through the night.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's UNS podcast. Special thanks go to Danny Johnson and Laura Dambeloff of Media Contender, and of course my guest, John Dotsie. Hit up theUNS.com for 12th Planet tour dates. Coming up next week, Adam Deitch and Borum Lee of Break Science will be on the program. Their latest EP, Further Than Our Eyes Can See, came out last month on Pretty Lights Music. Remember to visit theUNS.com for news, artist profiles, and tour dates from across the electronic music spectrum. And go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Write us a review, tell us what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the program, or you'd like to be a guest on the UNS podcast, contact me at anand@theUNS.com. That's A-N-A-N-D @theUNS.com. Catch you next week.